Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Oh my god, we just had like the sound wave blast.
I think your electronics are kind of fucked up down here. I'm not going to sign a door that's going to burst into flames.
Holy shit, man, that scared the shit out of me. Are you okay, Gavin?
Should I do it one more time just for fun?
No, I don't think it had anything to do with it.
I'm JP, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah, recorded live in the Jeanette D. Moses Memorial Studio. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the U.S., distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. On today's episode, The Melvins, Cultural, Confidential, and a preview of fall movies with Jimmy Martin. The Melvins are kicking off a U.S. tour under the moniker Melvins Light with Buzz Osborne, Dale Crover, and Trevor Dunn. This tour will find the band attempting to set a Guinness World Record by playing 51 consecutive dates in all 50 states and Washington, D.C. The tour kicks off on September 5th in Anchorage, Alaska, and will conclude on October 25th in Honolulu, Hawaii. Slug writer Dylan Chadwick chatted with Osborne as the band were preparing to head out on tour.
What was the main motivation to record it under the Melvins Light moniker? Was it just because of the lineup alteration, or?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, we don't want people to think that we're not going to be playing with the Big Group of Stalls anymore. It's a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know, Trevor Dunn playing bass, and he's playing stand-up bass. There's no electric bass on that record at all. It's all mic'd. We just wanted to make sure that people knew that it was something different, but it's definitely not light. You know, it's still pretty darn heavy. When you tour, a little bit less gear, you know, obviously one less drum set, and then a little bit smaller amps than we'd normally use with the big lineups. But still plenty loud enough, and I think by the tour we just did, a steady judge, you know, people seem to be pretty into it.
By your knowledge, this is going to be the ongoing lineup?
This will be the lineup that we tour the 51 in 51 days tour with.
Okay.
And we will, you know, hopefully we will continue both things. Also, we've been playing with the original drummer doing that. We have an EP coming out called Melvins 1983. More or less the original lineup minus the bass player.
With a new name, I mean, just for music nerds and Anglophiles alike, I mean, it's still part of the broad Melvins catalog. It's not a new band. Okay.
Absolutely.
The 51 in 51 days. First off, has anybody set this record before that you are trying to dethrone, or was this an idea that you conceived?
No. George Stroga tried to do it in about 1980.
Oh, fuck.
And they only got to about 30-something shows, and then they got too tired and they quit. So he claims that they did do it, but they're not in the record book, so
yeah.
Liar.
Yeah, yeah, right. Do you have to contact the Guinness Records ahead of time, or I'm assuming that you have to provide proof and a lot of citation. Or, I mean, is there a lot of work that goes into planning to set a world record, or is it the kind of thing where you can just call Guinness up later and say, hey, we did this?
Yeah, we had Monica do it. We thought of the idea and then also realized, like, oh, we're getting the Guinness book. So, you have to word things in a real particular, you know, so, and I can't remember what it was. It was something like fastest tour of the U.S. in shortest amount of time. So we figured this is a record we could break because none of us really know how to use a pogo stick or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
We couldn't break those records, you know. There's plenty of bands that tried the loudest band in the world.
Right, right.
So, which Manowar is the band that booked that.
Yeah, 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 right. I actually, I've read that in the Heavy Metal Encyclopedia.
Yeah, that's probably all they're good for.
Trajectory that you're going
to
take?
We're going to start in Alaska, and then we're going to drive all the way to Washington State in one day. No, actually, we're not going to do that. We got to fly.
Yeah.
But we're driving to Hawaii.
Yeah, okay. Right.
So, we start in Alaska, then we play Seattle, Portland, Boise, I think Salt Lake City's after that.
Yeah, probably.
And then Cheyenne. There's a couple pretty good drives in there.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
City to Cheyenne is a pretty long one.
Absolutely.
So I think we could do it, no problem. We've done longer tours than this. You know, we've done like 3 month tours, a 3 month stretch at the top. Not that long. It's about a normal length of a U.S. tour would be, but we're playing way more shows.
Yeah.
So, and we like to play every day anyway.
Sure.
Usually,
okay.
When we have a day off, it's because we have to drive. Like today.
Yeah.
We have to drive from Portland to San Francisco, so it would be a little hard to do the show tonight.
You're not worried of burnout or fatigue or anything? I mean, fatigue is part of the territory, but...
Well, when rock and rollers say that they have to cancel tours because they're burnt out and fatigued, it's because they've been up for days and days and days on cocaine. That's why. I mean, touring's not hard. You sit around, and then you finally play. And you sit around some more. So you gotta play again.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's not a hard job. Not a lot of people can handle it, you know?
Yeah.
Certainly seen people freak out on tour before, but, you know, we've been through.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you read, like, a Henry Rollins book or something, and they act like, I mean, you know, I guess, you know, I mean, you read about it like it's a wartime experience, like, kind of, you know?
We're gonna do it, so.
Yeah.
Not vacation, but...
Having been touring and playing as regularly and as long as you guys have, are there any places on this tour that you're going to hit that you've never played?
Yep, Alaska and Hawaii are two of them. We've never played in New Hampshire, Delaware. We've technically never played in the state of North Dakota, but we played, like there's a river that separates Fargo from Minnesota. So technically, okay. We haven't played that state, but we've played.
What will you be traveling in?
We're going to have some sort of van, vehicle of some sort.
I mean...
Pretty simple thing.
Yeah, and you're pretty secure that it can stand the rigors of the...
Well, I mean, you know, we're not going to take some, you know, 1960 EW or anything like that.
Yeah. Are you just going to be playing with locals in each place? Or, I mean, you're not... Are you bringing any tour mates? Because technically then they would get the world record, too, if they stuck with it the whole time.
That's right. That's right. And they'd get it before us, so...
Yeah.
We're bringing a few different bands.
Okay.
So that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But, I think when we're in Salt Lake City, we're bringing this band with us called Tweakbird from Los Angeles.
Oh, cool.
They're these two weirdo brother guys, duo, who are very, very talented.
From the Melvins, this is Leon versus the Revolution off their album Freak Puke. That was the Melvins with Leon vs. the Revolution from their latest album. They'll be stopping by Salt Lake City on September 10th at Club Sound. For more info on the tour and the band, visit them online at themelvins.net. This week, SB Dance will debut Creative Confidential, a conversation series about art and society. The company's founder will moderate a panel to discuss specific issues, this month's being access, ownership, and creativity in the info age. The panel will consist of 7 creative individuals who work with online content, including Glenn Warchall, Deborah 3D, and Jason Hill. Slug writer Mariah Mellis chatted with Brown about the show.
Stephen, I have been following you guys a little bit more this year after coming into contact with you a couple of performances ago, and just been fascinated by your work. The last time we talked was of Me and Mero.
It really
okay.
is.
I have been fascinated by what you guys have been doing here, and you're doing a lot with some really forward thinking in the artistic community, and I wanted to follow up with you again and find out what you're doing as of now.
Well, SB Dance has a couple of things coming up in September. We have a new program called Cultural Confidential, which launches, it begins September 5th, and we'll probably be talking about that in a second here, but that is a program about, you know, fostering conversations about creativity. We're interested with Cultural Confidential, is a series that's aimed at the creatives in Salt Lake, people who are making stuff, people who are sharing stuff.
With the Cultural Confidential, this is not going to be a dance performance. This is a panel discussion.
Yeah.
Even though SB Dance is putting it on, I was thinking, oh, they'll be doing some dances in between to liven the mood or maybe to expand upon the discussion. But the main objective of this event is to really get creative types talking and conversing. It's not a performance.
Yeah, it's not so much about a performance, it's about what we make things out of. What are the issues for people who are making art, whether it be dance or film or visual art or theater? And what are the issues, what are the great tools we have available to us, and how those tools might be restricted, how people might be controlling creativity in sometimes a way that helps us earn a living, and sometimes in a way that maybe prevents us from making a living.
Well, and I noticed on your panel discussion here, you've got some pretty good heavy, I mean, it's diverse, and I would call them kind of heavy hitters on the subject. One of them was Josh Blumenthal. I think people are familiar with his photography work. On his bio, it mentions that he had to basically come up with a whole new website because someone took some liberties and decided they liked his website and stole a lot of that artistic and creative, I guess it'd be intellectual properties, so to speak. It's you come up with a plan and then someone else kind of steals your ideas and your creativity and calls it their own.
They actually stole his website verbatim.
Wow.
So there was some guy in Italy who wanted to be a photographer. So he basically stole Josh's website, all the photos, not just the construction of it, everything. And then when it said it had Josh Blumenthal's picture in it, he just put his own. So he was that creative. Oh. He put his own picture in there. It was funny. The only reason Josh knew about it is that he was alerted to it by one of his hosting servers, I think. But in any case, this guy took it all, and eventually, you know, Josh was able to shut that down. But it really got him thinking, and it got him thinking about owning stuff and who owns what and how this works with images. So it kind of drove him to kind of a Luddite position where he started using 19th century wet plate photography techniques. And the only reason I bumped into this subject is because he was shooting them of people with their work tools. And so he shot a picture of me and a tutu or something like that. Yeah, I think a tutu and a cane, right? And top hat. And so, but I was sitting there watching him do this, and it's crazy. You know, wet plate photography is like throwing a plate in there, mixing ether all over the place.
But it's not easy to steal the idea, and no one else is doing it.
No, and then he makes
separates himself from the pack.
And then you sign a contract that you will never digitize your copy of this photograph, nor will he. So it was just a really crazy reaction, interesting, I should say, reaction to what happened with the website. On the other hand is Aaron Moulton, who's the senior curator at the Utah Museum of Contemporary Art. And he has a satirical newspaper where he's grabbed famous images and totally repurposed them as, you know, as a way of poking fun at the art world. So he's done the exact opposite.
I'm sure he got permission, right?
I'm sure he didn't.
I'm sure he didn't.
But this is exactly it. I mean, it's this subject that's really fascinating. Like, for example, the Spiral Jetty, you're not allowed to photo that. Did you know that?
Well, I have never personally taken a photo of it, but I know many exist. So.
Many exist. In fact, you can go to the Museum of Modern Art in New York City and see a picture of it that's unauthorized. So this stuff happens all over, and it's a question of kind of negotiating, navigating these waters, and I think that's what's really interesting.
I worked on a film years ago with Crispin Glover, and he was just here at the Tower Theater showing it. And people are always asking me, well, can we ever see this film? It's like, not unless he brings it. He literally has the one and only copy of the film, and he will not digitize it. He will not put it on the internet because it's a very personal and it has some very serious issues, and he wants to talk about it. He wants the audience to talk to him about it, not just be able to look at it and go, wow, that was weird, because... You know, it's very, he calls it counterculture, and he will not do the usual thing just to make money.
But it's that when you're making stuff, and there's a activist and scholar named Larry Lessig who talks about this, everything that you create builds on something from the past. Okay, that's how it works. When is that cool, and when is that not cool? That's the subject of this, you know, this discussion that we're going to have. The lines are not clear, you know, and we have a bunch of different permissions, right? I mean, that's what Creative Commons licenses are all about. Yes, you can use this, just attribute it to me. Yes, you can use this, you can't share it. Yes, you can use this and you can actually build on this, or no, you can't build on this. This is huge. I use that kind of music. I use Creative Commons music all the time now in my shows. Probably half of the music comes from the internet, from individuals in the internet, some of whom I know, some of whom I can't even track down because they've erased all footprints purposefully because they've ripped off Led Zeppelin or somebody.
You had mentioned that the creative and the innovation is building on the past. You've also got a couple of other kind of key points that we're going to be looking at that panel to talk about. And one of them I thought that was really interesting. The past always tries to control the creativity of the future endeavors. Do you have an experience in that? Or can you talk a little bit about the past coming back and ripping it?
Well, I mean, you know, Disney is the perfect example, right? I mean, every 20 years, Mickey Mouse copyright comes up, and Disney goes to Washington, D.C. and gets it extended. How old is Mickey Mouse now? Like 70 years old? When can I make an art piece about Mickey Mouse? Never? Like, just never? Is that going to be like, you know, like Shakespeare? Imagine if Shakespeare, like, just locked down all of his work and nobody could do any derivatives of Shakespeare. No operas, but, you know, yeah, when he would need a new job, lots of, yeah. I mean, can you imagine if that would occur? So,
although it strikes me, though, that in our, what we do in the theater and in dance is very collaborative. We can't even say who made up a certain movement a lot of the time. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And I direct the pieces that Stephen choreographs in some way, but where it's very squishy, and the dancers do things, the actor does things, I do things, he does things. So the whole process is very, very collaborative. So I think we might have a completely different idea about that sort of sharing thing than, say, Mickey Mouse, than Walt Disney did about Mickey Mouse, because Mickey Mouse is iconic, and we are lively art, I would say, and fluid.
Well, and that's true to an extent, but then let's look at the software world, right? I have a software developer, Jason Hill, who takes part in this. Jason, there he is, a very, you know, brilliant guy, works in a technology-based field with tons of work in it. He spends a lot of his time on open source products, right? Things that are contributed back to the community at large for a couple of reasons. One, they get better that way. When you have, you know, 20,000 really smart people working on something, it gets better. And also because he thinks this is the right way to do things. Linux, Drupal are all examples of very, very successful open source communities. But then on the other hand, you have super closed, you know, you have big corporations pumping out software that maybe was open and free to use at one time and then acquires, gets more popular. And, you know, like PHP, MySQL, and Oracle, and starts to, that sort of stuff, they start to exercise more and more control. If like Winnie was talking about, we are, you know, we work very collaboratively. I don't know who made what when we do a show. Well, if we were making a show on Broadway for Disney, I can tell you who owns that. There's no problem. And it wouldn't be us. And in fact, you know, we might not see very much cash out of it.
Cultural Confidential takes place on Wednesday, September 5th in the Rose Wagner Black Box Theater. It's located at 138 West, 300 South. The show starts at 8 p.m. and is just $5. For more info on the show and their upcoming season, visit them online at sbdance.com. It's about the middle of our show, and you know what that means. It's time to do our weekly daily calendar rundown.
Woohoo!
I'm joined today by Esther Moronio. She's the managing editor of the magazine here, and she's going to let us know what's going on. She's going to give us the rundown on the birthdays as well, which we've got a few of this week. Do you want to start with Wednesday for us?
Sure.
Or I could throw, I mean, you know, whatever you want.
Do you want to do it?
No.
Okay, I'll do it.
No, particularly. Thank you.
Okay. So, on Wednesday, September 5th, the Southern Utah International Documentary Film Festival is starting, and that's down at Dixie State College in St. George. It goes through September 9th, and if you are heading down south or if you are one of our podcast listeners down there, you should definitely go to this. And if you missed out on the Andrew Bird documentary that was shown up here, Fever Year, that will be showing down there. So make sure that you go check it out and read our feature on that film in our August issue.
It's a really cool article, and I wish I could have seen it, but people down south, they definitely have an opportunity. And I guess there's birthdays right now, too. Want to do those?
Yeah, we have two birthdays on September 5th. The first is Levi Rounds. He is our, I don't know, slug comedian. He knows all things comedy.
He's a staff comedian.
Yes. We bring him in. He's like the court jester. And no, just kidding. But he has contributed to the podcast in the past and contributes here and there for the mag. So happy birthday, Levi. And next up is James Bennett. He's a longtime writer for the magazine. Does a lot of music reviews and music features, interviews, cool punk bands, stuff like that. So happy birthday, James.
Great job with the birthdays. And Friday, September 7th, just a few days after that September 5th, we've got September 7th, of course, it's Giraffula with Seth Cook. And it's actually just Seth Cook. It's his solo project.
Yeah, I'm excited to see this because I haven't seen Giraffula play live yet.
It's good. He does it all. It's amazing. And Green Arrow, which is a new band of Will Sartain's, that'll be at Urban. And there's also, that's probably the most important day of the month for another reason.
Yeah, a new issue of Slug can be found anyplace cool. So make sure you hit up your local bar, coffee shop.
Tattoo parlor. Pleasure house.
Pleasure house. What's a pleasure house? It's like a whorehouse, like a brothel?
You know what, I don't want
to
get
in. Do we distribute to strip clubs?
We distribute to
places. Are there brothels?
Places that
Utah?
Are cool. I was thinking of cool places. And pleasure houses are they. My friend goes to them.
I wouldn't consider a pleasure house cool, but
my friend said it was cool.
Yeah, your friend. I'm not. Mm-hmm. You're such a catch, JP.
You got me to choke on my own laughter. Good job, listener. Thank you. And Saturday, September.
I'm also the slug comedian, apparently.
Yeah, we got another staff comedian here. Speaking of court jesters. And Saturday, September 8th, it's another edition of Summer of Death. This is the... Do you want to continue? I'm still choking on the laughter.
Yeah. So Summer of Death is our amateur skate competition. We have two of them every summer. This is the rough side version of Summer of Death. Johnny Roughneck and his crew will be coming down and skating with everybody, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It takes place at Fairmont this year, and it starts at 1 p.m. That's when registration begins, and you can actually pre-register on the website at summerofdeath.com. So if you don't want your mommy to drop you off and sign a waiver in front of everybody, make sure that they do that online beforehand.
And the Old 97s, Those Darlins, and Rhett Miller will be at Urban. It's kind of an alt-country lineup.
And we also have Art Meets Fashion that day, and that's at Red Butte. It's an art and fashion show that's going to feature work from a bunch of local designers and artists. And it should be a good time. It's in the beautiful Red Butte garden, so be a nice juxtaposition of nature and man-made work.
Beautiful. Are you a writer? You're a writer, yeah?
I'm a poet.
And Sunday, September 9th, Big Business, which is characterized as loud, weird rock, will be at Urban. And their two members also play in the Melvins. And you can read more about them in our September issue.
Yes, you can. Ricky Vigil wrote that piece.
And I know that we never talk enough about reggae, so here's your reggae for the year. Matisse Yahoo, The Dirty Heads, and that's September 10th. It's a Monday, which is a perfect day for reggae.
It's like beatboxing stuff.
That's what you think reggae is?
Oh, Matisse Yahoo does beatboxing.
Oh, okay.
Let's hear you do some beatboxing. No, I was gonna do that part.
Oh, okay. Well, then what am I supposed to do? That's all
you're supposed
beatbox
to
is.
Bring down the. Oh.
Are you talking about freestyling?
No, I don't know if you know. He does beatboxing.
What you're talking about.
Okay, never
mind. Well, people can sample my beatboxing that I did there and make a world famous rap song if they want.
Cool.
You're welcome to do that. Actually, you can sample any of my talking or my beatboxing and auto-tune it and make it audio gold.
Yes, you can do that by downloading our Slug magazine app. You can download the latest episode of Sand Waves directly from there and also find all of our calendar listings along with the latest issue of the magazine.
Great job as usual with the events. Thank you, Esther. We look forward to seeing you again in maybe a few weeks if you'll decide to join us again. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, I think that we're going to have a revolving cast of event DJs. DJs?
Speechifiers?
Speechifiers, and they'll be just as funny as me, don't worry.
I doubt that, but I can hope. Thank you, Esther.
Thank you.
Local musician and producer Camden Chamberlain is notorious for the volume of his producing work and as a frontman. Recently, he toured and fronted Cave Doll, and his current group, the Suicycles, have been around for about 2 years this September. In the first half of 2011, the band released two EPs, two music videos, and their debut full-length album, Sex, Drugs, and Death. The band's second full-length album, Love, Light, and Life, will be the band's final album as their keyboardist, Kelazor von Gorlas, will be leaving Utah. Here's the Suicycles with Broken Sleep off their new album, Love, Light, and Life. That was Broken Sleep from the Suicycles, off their new album Love, Light, and Life. The band's final two shows will be on September 21st at Brewski's in Ogden, and their farewell show on September 28th at Bar Deluxe with Musclehawk and the Samuel Smith Band. For more info on the group, visit them online at thesuicycles.com. It's time now for one of my favorite segments on the show. We get to talk to Jimmy Martin. He's our resident film critic, and he lets us know all the great movies that are coming up. This time, we're talking fall movies. Thank you, Jimmy, for joining me once more.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Let's start. Let's just get right into it.
Just jump in head first?
Yeah, we'll ask how you are later.
Well, I guess we've all had our manly dose of movies now that The Expendables 2 is out. God, that movie's awful. You know, I was expecting a lot more, but the problem with that movie is that if you look at the poster, about 80% of the people that are on that poster are in that film for less than 10 minutes. Mm. It's bullshit.
Damn it.
We got screwed again. Thanks, Jean-Claude. All right. Starting up, coming in the fall, a lot of people are excited for Paul Thomas Anderson's new movie called The Master. And there's kind of rumors going around whether it's based on the origins of a Scientology or not. Philip Seymour Hoffman plays the star of it, and it's about him basically having this cultish religion, and it kind of sparks and becomes popular in America, and Joaquin Phoenix becomes his right-hand man. He came out and said, no, it's not about Scientology, it's more just something like Scientology. I'm calling bullshit. I think it's about Scientology.
Is it about a science fiction writer?
Right. they're not saying much about it, but that's just my opinion of what it probably is about. For some reason, studios still think Resident Evil films are still wanted around here, and I say stop it, because Mila Jovovich was hot into The Fifth Element, and that's all I need to see her in. If you are a Pixar fan, they keep re-releasing their old films. Finding Nemo, which is probably one of my favorite Pixar films, is coming back out in 3D, but the more reason I'm excited for it is because Pixar always attaches new shorts to it. So you're going to get a new short called Partysaurus Rex, which I'm looking forward to. September 21st, I guess geeks are going to start uniting again. Some people were not excited about this film. I am, which is Dread 3D. This is Judge Dredd, based on the comic book series. Kind of going back to Stallone, we already started with this. Stallone made the Judge Dredd film, God, 95, somewhere around.
It was terrible, and it was full of Taco Bell.
Yeah, no, that was Demolition Man.
Oh, shit. I confused the two. Does it matter?
Well, we just had a movie night at Ruby's where we said Stallone ruined the future, and it was Judge Dredd and Demolition Man, so you're not far off. But this time it's Carl Urban. And the one thing that everybody can at least shut their mouths off is he doesn't take the helmet off. Because in the comics, Judge Dredd never takes his helmet off. And in Stallone, the first thing he did in the first 5 minutes was take off to show his stupid mug. But Carl Urban, who is a handsome man, unlike Stallone.
He played one of the guys in the Chronicles of Riddick, right?
Carl Urban?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was also in
sci-fi movies.
He was in Star Trek.
Right.
He played
Spock. Or Dr.
Crusher. Yeah. No, the Crusher? Who the hell is it? What? McCoy, that's right. God, I can't even think of it. Jesus.
I was way off, it's okay.
I just played Spock, alright? I don't know who I was working with. So.
Oh, yeah. James Martin, listeners, resembles Spock.
Yeah, that's right.
Or the guy that played Spock.
Zachary Quinto.
There we go.
Call it to me when you see me. It's fine. I promise I don't get irritated by it. But Judge Dredd, or Dredd 3D looks, I think it looks good. I think it looks, and this is a compliment, a movie came out earlier this year called The Raid Redemption. And basically it was about a SWAT team going up a skyscraper and kicking the shit out of everybody on the way up. We can say shit, right? Okay, good. So Dredd, same on the same plot synopsis, going to a building, kicking the shit out of everybody going all the way up. So simple, easy, fun.
And I saw that movie on your recommendation, and The Raid was one of the best martial arts movies I've ever seen. As you
saw
said,
it?
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, when in the first 5 minutes when a guy kicks the shit out of somebody and then shoots him in the face twice, how could you go wrong? I mean,
can't.
So, yeah. And just like a side note, I heard someone describe the new Ninja Turtles movie coming out like in a couple of years, and he said it reminds me of The Raid Redemption, which my jaw hit the ground.
The Ninja Turtles?
Yeah, the next Ninja Turtle movies, he said, I guess it's a script or just some treatments. Mm. He said it reminds me of The Raid, which, holy hell, if Michelangelo kicks somebody in the head 3 times and shoots him in the face.
All I hope is that they have the white eyes like that first edition of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You remember the first one?
Yeah. And they all really had the same bandana colors. And
yeah.
It could go that way. I don't know.
To collect those, admittedly. And then they got increasingly more cartoony and terrible.
And they just loved pizza.
Yeah, and then they just liked pizza the whole damn time. Before they were serious ninjas who happened to be turtles. And then it just made a mockery of the genre, sorry.
Bastards. But the next one, September 28th, the film that I'm most looking forward to, and it's directed by Rian Johnson, stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Bruce Willis, it's Looper. If you know anything about Looper, it's a time-traveling hitman movie. And if you know anything about me, My two favorite genres of film are time traveling and hitmen, and I've always made jokes for years that I was going to make a time traveling hitman movie. And Rian Johnson beat me to the punch, which
son of a bitch.
Is totally fine. It's totally fine because it looks fucking awesome.
Even with Joseph Gordon-Levitt's nose job, you alright?
I think it looks fine. And actually, the one thing they're not really showing in the previews, but I saw some footage at Comic-Con, is that he does a dead-on impersonation of Bruce Willis.
I noticed that.
He sounds just like him. It's
in the trailer, he does a really good job.
Yeah, and I was saying this upstairs. I'm totally gay for Joseph Gordon-Levitt because I don't think he's done a movie that I've hated ever. And so he was just in Dark Knight Rises. He's in Looper. I just watched Hesher for the other day for the first time. He's amazing. So
wait, what about 500 Days of Summer?
Love it. Okay. I love 500 Days of Summer. 50-50 made me cry. I voted him, the Utah Film Critics Association voted him Best Actor last year for 50-50.
Wait, did you just say you were the whole Utah Film Critics Association?
No, because it was a vote, but I will say this, I pushed it more than anything. And Jeff Feist did too. I'll say he was one of my backers, but we got everybody to vote for that one. But he won, and he didn't even get nominated for an Oscar, which is bullshit. But
son of a word.
He just needs to listen to us. October 5th. Taken 2. Now, I love this because everybody's like, God, can he just keep a hold of his fucking daughter at least once? This is Liam Neeson's movie.
And again, same guy?
it's same character, except this time Liam Neeson and his wife are the ones who get kidnapped.
And
the guy who kidnaps them is someone from the first one who, you know, he killed his brother or something like that, so trying to save his daughter. It reminds me of Home Alone 2, where you're kind of like, Jesus, man, like, how many times can you lose your fucking kid? But I'm excited for it. I love the first Taken.
Really?
It could be terrible. Oh, have you seen it?
I haven't.
It makes James Bond look like a pussy.
Really?
Oh, and those were words out of my dad's mouth, right, when he saw it. I go, do you guys see this, Dad? And he's like, fuck James Bond.
James Martin Sr. said that.
His name is Dave.
Fair enough.
I have to give him credit.
Yeah.
Frankenweenie is coming out. Tim Burton's stop-motion animation feature, which is actually kind of how he got his start, based on the short film. And you can kind of see from the footage that it's definitely a dream project for him because it's going back to his origins. So I think it could be good.
Is it black and white too?
Yeah. It's totally black and white.
Maybe I'm all right with it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Tim Burton and I, we haven't been getting along.
No, he's just not digging the Alice in Wonderlands and the Chocolate Factory.
I fell asleep during Chocolate Factory and I didn't want to get disappointed at the Alice in Wonderland.
I think you're just tired of Johnny Depp and goofy hats.
That's okay. You know what? That's part of it. I like my Depp straight up. I like him brooding 90s Depp.
Like Ed Wood?
Yeah. And playing Hunter S. Thompson.
But that was Tim Burton, too. A film that I actually want to give some love to, because I kind of wanted to say, fuck Paranormal Activity 4. A movie that was at Sundance called VHS. And this was kind of cool. Remember the old Tales from the Dark Side movies? Where you kind of had like three short films within the movie?
Yeah.
That's what VHS is. Basically, it's about like a bunch of kids who raid a house, and they've been hired to find a VHS tape. The house is creepy as hell. They find a pile of VHS tapes, and they're like, go, let's play them and see what's on the tapes. And each one is a short story. Really cool idea, but the one thing that I love, because these Paranormal Activities and found footage movies are kind of getting so redundant, and they've been done time and time again, but VHS did something kind of cool, cheesy, whatever you want to call it, but at least innovative, is that they used Skype footage. So it's like people Skyping on a thing, and that's what the short film looks like, two people Skyping to each other. And it'd never been done before. Now, Paranormal Activity, which comes out a week later, I know they had to have seen this film at Sundance, because on the previews of theirs, there's a Skype footage scene. I'm like, you assholes.
Which one's going to have a bigger marketing budget behind it?
Well, it's not so... Well, marketing.
Exactly.
Paranormal.
And so people easily will say that VHS ripped off.
But at least VHS is coming out a week first.
Yeah.
That's all I can say. Because I actually wanted to look at the dates because I was going to be super pissed if they tried to put it right in front of them. Because like VHS, at least they had some ingenuity behind it, but
yeah.
Whatever. October 12th, Argo, which is a Ben Affleck's new movie coming out. And for all you that said Ben Affleck couldn't direct a Justice League movie, please fuck off. Because, yes, okay, he was in Geely and he dated Jennifer Lopez, but the guy's a great director. Watch The Town, watch Gone Baby Gone. He's really good. And so this one is actually based on a true story during the Iranian Revolution, where six Americans are kind of trapped in Iran. And the way they get them out is they put on a fake movie production. And that's how they get past, you know, visas and whatnot to get into Iran.
They turn them into a movie crew, right?
Yeah, essentially, and just to get them out. So it's, you know, super tense, looks really good. October 19th, I just wanted to say this one. I love that Tyler Perry's trying to make an action star out of himself in Alex Cross.
What?
Yeah.
What?
He's taking off the fat suit, and he wants to be an action star. Not going to happen, Tyler. Sorry. Put the fat suit back on and go back inside.
There's got to be something to that guy's demographic, though. They just love the shit out of Tyler Perry movies, and they'll see every one of them.
Well, I just love that like there's just three leading men who like to put on fat suits. It's Martin Lawrence, Tyler Perry, and Eddie Murphy.
Why aren't there enough white men doing that?
One guy, wasn't there one?
Was there one?
I can't remember. He tried to do it. October 26th, Cloud Atlas. Not a lot about this film. Looks pretty cool. It's by the Wachowskis. And notice I'm not saying the Wachowski brothers anymore, because I believe one had a sex change.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah. So
wait, they're coming out with a new movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's groundbreaking.
Cloud Atlas. It's apparently this giant epic, and I believe it premiered at Cannes. It's about how people's lives affect the past, present, and future. Tom Hanks, Halle Berry. Who else is in this thing? Hugo Weaving, Susan Sarandon, Hugh Grant.
Holy shit.
Tom Hanks is playing like 8 different characters, and I think Halle Berry is too. I think they're all playing different characters. And it's supposed to be just absolutely insane, but I think word was pretty good on coming out of the festival.
Did it win any awards?
I'm not sure if it won any awards. Yeah, I don't know if it won anything. Usually smaller films kind of get that stuff, but yeah, I'm still excited for it because the Wachowskis, at least they always have a fun vision of anything else.
Yeah.
So
that'll be interesting to see.
There's a great movie, again, this was at Sundance. It was called The Surrogate at Sundance. Now it's called The Sessions.
You saw this one as well?
I saw this one. It's got John Hawks, Helen Hunt, and William H. Macy. And John Hawks plays a guy who's in an iron lung who wants to lose his virginity. Great performances from everyone. Be prepared to see them getting nominated for a lot of awards, I think.
Is this a period piece back during polio epidemic?
I think it's like in the, I want to say, mid-80s, maybe 70s? I can't remember exactly what year it is. November 2nd, this is actually another film I'm really looking forward to. Wreck-It Ralph is a Disney film, Disney cartoon, about a video game character who breaks away from his video game to go try out different things because he's tired of his life. Voiced by John C. Reilly. Sarah Silverman's in it as well. What's really cool about this film is it reminds me to Who Framed Roger Rabbit, because there's so many different copyrights and title characters from different video games, from Nintendo to Sega to, you know, Xbox, that they've all agreed to say, yeah, you can use our characters for this film, which makes it so much better. Like, if you kind of just put your egos aside, you can get a lot of fun things done with it. So, looks a lot of fun.
I heard Sarah Silverman talking about that on the Doug Loves Movies podcast.
Yeah.
And it sounds really good. I didn't know that was the same movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, totally. It looks a lot of fun. The Man with the Iron Fist, I just love that it's directed by RZA. From the Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh, shit.
So he's giving it a shot at it. It's basically just a martial arts film with Russell Crowe and Lucy Liu. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh, yeah, I saw that preview.
It looks pretty damn insane.
It does. I know the Wu-Tang Clan, if people aren't familiar, they legitimately took that from Kung Fu movies. Those guys are all huge Kung Fu fans. I'm sure he did a good job if he stuck to the type of realistic portrayal of those movies, similar to Black Dynamite, but a little bit more serious.
Yeah.
It looks like this one.
Yeah.
It could be pretty good.
And I think he's got Quentin Tarantino's stamp of approval.
I think he's
producing it or something. Let's see. Flight is Robert Zemeckis' return to live-action film. Robert Zemeckis, Back to the Future, Forrest Gump. I can't stand his motion cap movies. They're just really boring. But his live-action ones are usually pretty good. And this one stars Denzel Washington, John Goodman, and Don Cheadle, and it's about a pilot who actually saves a plane from crashing. So kind of picture the New York incident in the Hudson River. He saves it, an investigation comes out, and I believe, if I heard right, he was drunk when he did it.
Oh, shit.
So it's like, is he a hero or not? I don't know how you turn this into like a drama, because I mean, if you're like, I did it drunk, it's kind of like those Olympians who get gold medals while they're high, you know? It's like, what, you're going to fault me for it? Like, I did my job, so. Who knows?
Oh, well, first of all, you're spreading vicious rumors about Michael Phelps, I think. And they do test them for drugs. They can't actually do it while they're high, but I see what you're saying.
Well, there was that snowboarder, too. He just nailed it. And he was totally high when he did it.
Allegedly, sir. We have to say allegedly.
Allegedly?
Okay. We'll get sued. This podcast doesn't have the money to get sued.
See, if I was one of the Olympians, I'd be like, yeah, well, sure I was.
You got high and I liked it. And
I still kicked the shit out of you.
If we have time, let's say, to see this one more movie, what would it be of the fall, Jimmy?
I'm going to go with Skyfall, which is the new James Bond movie. Sam Mendes is actually directing this time. He did American Beauty. But it's Daniel Craig, Javier Bardem. Javier Bardem plays a mean motherfucker.
He does.
So watch No Country for Old Men if you haven't seen that. But that kind of puts it up there.
It was kind of silently coming out. I mean, I haven't seen any publicity for it.
It's coming on stronger because it took a while because I think it's MGM who's putting it out.
Yep.
And they were bankrupt for a while. And so they had to get the money back before they lost the rights to it. So they got their rights back, and it looks badass. I love Daniel Craig as James Bond.
Me too. He's my favorite Bond. I know that's heretical saying it in some circles.
You hear somebody just going, motherfucker, Sean Connery.
Well, Sean Connery is great, but you need a guy that can jump off of buildings, do some parkour.
I'm like the guy who's like,
I like Roger Moore.
The one guy.
I like my Bonds sweet and wrinkly.
Oh, wow. We could have a whole podcast about Bonds and terrible Bonds. But I've always been a Bond fan. I've seen almost all of them, and I can't wait to see this one, too.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. So, fingers crossed.
Where can we find more of you on Slug Magazine or slugmag.com?
You can find all my reviews in the back of Slug Magazine. It's usually, I always say 5 pages from the back. It's an estimate. But you can find us there, and then you can also find reviews online and all that fun stuff. So
let's give you a quick shout out for your other projects. Might as well.
Sure, absolutely. It's you can find me on Facebook on Big Movie Mouth Off. We do our TV show. It's me and Jeff Weiss, who is a Slug alum, still giving the love out there. And we do our show. It's Facebook.com/Big Movie Mouth Off. We give away free movie passes and tell you our opinions on everything that comes out. I guess there's also, you can catch me on U92 every Friday morning. And you can also catch me on Geek Show Podcast every Monday. So there you go. Busy motherfucker.
You busy motherfucker. And as usual, a great rundown of movies. I'm glad that you got to see some of those good Sundance movies that we can check out.
Yeah, check them out.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Sure.
Will you sign our wall now?
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to another edition of Sound Waves from the Underground. For all things Slug Mag, visit us at slugmag.com. What are some of your favorite food trucks in town? Are you hungry right now and thinking about one? Jeffrey Stedman from Yelp will be in to talk about food trucks for an upcoming episode, and we'd like to hear what your favorite traveling hangouts are. You can either send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. We may just play you on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan, with associate producers Esther Moronio, Ricky Vigil, Alexander Ortega, and JP. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis, with our main logo and art designed by T-Done, and technical design by Kate O'Connor. On next week's episode, Atmosphere, Love, Dance More, and the SLC Photo Collective.